the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good Friday morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West Farm City Newsday. We are jumping right into today's programs. Starting off with our headlines, Brian German is talking to us about grants made available for California biosolarization. Taylor Hellman has details on USDA Food Box program hitting a pretty big milestone. And I'm starting off the show today with details on potential coronavirus relief to the agriculture industry. So let's jump right in. A new bill has been introduced that is critical to farm business. This week, the Senate introduced the Health Economic Assistance Liability Protection and Schools Act, also known as the HEALS Act, in efforts to bring more relief during the pandemic. The HEALS Act would provide an additional $20 billion to the U.S. Department of Agriculture to help out farmers and ranchers. American Farm Bureau President Zibby Duvall says, quote, "We are grateful to Leader McConnell and Senate leadership for placing a high priority on bringing relief to America's farmers and ranchers throughout this crisis. The additional $20 billion for agriculture in the HEALS Act would come at a critical time as the impacts of this pandemic continue to hit our farms and rural communities." According to AFBF, the bill can be used to prevent, prepare for, and respond to coronavirus, providing support for agriculture producers, growers, and processors impacted by coronavirus. This includes processors, growers, and producers of specialty crops, non-specialty crops, dairy, livestock, and poultry. In addition, the bill will allocate $475 million to USDA to address other issues, including $245 million of that to make up for lost user fees due to the decline in agriculture inspection services, and $113 million in rural rental assistance to low-wage residents. Stay tuned to AgNet West and this radio station as we continue to provide you with coverage on this topic. But for now, here's Taylor Hellman with more agriculture news.
The federal program providing food to families in need during this coronavirus pandemic hits a milestone and will continue. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue announced this week that the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Farmers to Families Food Box program has distributed over 50 million food boxes in support of American farmers and families affected by COVID-19. Perdue said in a statement, quote, "The delivery of 50 million food boxes has helped an incredible number of Americans in need. I couldn't be prouder of the great job done by the food box program staff and the many farmers, distributors, and nonprofits that helped to get this program off the ground for the American people." As AgNet West has reported over the last 2 weeks, several California-based operations are involved in this project, including SunTerra Produce out of the Imperial Valley. SunTerra Produce President Steve Brazil said the program has been amazing all around, both providing food to families in need and also helping them keep employees working. USDA noted in the release that it was the quick implementation of this program that has made it so successful. Flavor First owner Kirby Johnson was quoted in the release. He said he was actually planting green beans when this happened. A good friend called him about the program. That was on a Tuesday. The following Thursday, he was packing in his packing house vegetables to go to the people. Kirby noted, quote, "I've done a lot of government stuff. Nothing has ever been this quick, especially produce. People that needed it need it. They didn't need it 2 months from now. They needed it now, and we did that." Because of the success of the program, USDA also announced a third round of the Farmers to Families Food Box program, with purchases going to distributors to occur beginning by September 1st, with completion by October 31st. The purchases will spend the balance of the $3 billion authorized for the program. In the third round of purchases, USDA plans to purchase combination boxes to ensure all recipients' organizations have access to fresh produce, dairy products, fluid milk, and meat products. Eligibility in the third round will be open to entities who can meet the government's requirements and specifications. Proposals will be expected to illustrate how coverage will be provided to areas identified as opportunity zones, detail subcontracting agreements, and address the last-mile delivery of product into the hands of the food-insecure population. SunTerra Produce detailed this process in their interview with AgNet West. They lined up several food banks prior to their proposal. You can listen to that on agnetwest.com. Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Taylor Hillman.
UC Cooperative Extension is conducting an online agronomic survey to help gain a better understanding of the needs and challenges of agricultural production. Agronomy and Nutrient Management Farm Advisor Nick Clark described why participating in the survey is so important.
It's a tool that we in the agronomy program team, which is an organization of agronomists that are extension specialists and extension advisors, some campus professors, and then other staff within the university that all have an interest in agronomy research and extension, decided that we, at this point in time, don't know enough about what our clientele need from us. And the questionnaire is a tool that we're using to assess those needs. That's part of our job, and it's a step in making sure that all of our efforts, either in the applied research that we conduct or in the education and extension that we engage in, that it's meaningful and that it's something that's accepted and needed by our clientele. And it can help tell us whether or not we're on target with our efforts. It can tell us where we're missing key issues. It can tell us where we're off base. So essentially, it's a tool that gives us information straight from our clientele that helps us improve our service to them. And we felt it was important to do this now because everybody's working with less and less resources these days. The university is not immune to that trend, but we all recognize that issues in agricultural production are becoming more and more complex. So this was sort of our way of coming up with a benchmark activity that was going to help us, get a foothold in these trends so that we can move forward, recognizing that we've got less resources, that our clientele has less resources, and that things are not getting easier to deal with.
For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Thanks, Brian. And it's time for us to head out for a quick break, but we'll be right back with more of the day's agriculture news, including our livestock report, when we return. Remember, you can catch any of today's reports by heading on over to our website. That's www.agnetwest.com for more information. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. And now here's Brian German with more agriculture news.
Three grants have been awarded aimed at bolstering soil health by developing innovative organic strategies for controlling weeds, pests, and disease. The Organic Farming Research Foundation and the Foundation for Food and Agriculture Research formed a partnership in 2019 to increase funding for research that improves soil health and reduces environmental impacts. One of the recent award recipients was Martin Guarino with the National Center for Appropriate Technology. He was awarded more than $17,000 to measure the efficacy of biosolarization, a new innovation in the area of weed control that combines soil solarization with biofumigation. Biosolarization includes the use of organic amendments such as compost, cover crops, and green manure under solarization plastic. The research team aims to show that biosolarization can achieve equal or better weed control in less time compared to solarization alone. The research is taking place on three organic farms in the Sacramento Valley. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Well, in today's livestock news, the cattle industry's summer business meeting wrapped up yesterday in Denver, Colorado. Producers from across the country were on hand to discuss various issues. The Public Lands Council Executive Director, Caitlin Glover, was one of those taking part. She explains what PLC has been involved with thus far this year.
Well, there sure is a lot going on both this year here in Denver and then across the country on some of these public lands issues. This administration has had a hefty to-do list when they came into both to the agencies and into the White House a few years ago. Over the last few years, we've seen them work on Endangered Species Act improvements to the administration of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. But probably the biggest and most noteworthy change that we're highlighting this week and discussing this week here in Denver are improvements and modernization of the National Environmental Policy Act. We're very, very pleased to see the proposed improvements that the White House Council on Environmental Quality proposed earlier this spring. those became final about 2 weeks ago. So it's nice to come to a meeting like this, a gathering of producers, and to have some good news to share, especially in a year like this.
Now, Glover also serves as the executive director of the Natural Resources for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. She talks about what discussions took place this week during the summer business meeting.
So my team on the NCBA side, putting my NCBA hat on, my team deals with property rights and environmental issues, as well as some of those federal land issues. As we talk about NEPA, as we talk about ESA, and as we talk about things like grazing regs and wildfire, the conversation is really very positive. A lot of producers are very anxious to have a lot of these rulemakings finalized, because this year has been a strange in terms of regulatory activity and schedule. But really, you know, we're in the last half of this calendar year, and in the last half of the year before an election. So the conversation really centers around making sure that we close all of these items out, making sure that things are finalized, so that we can avoid any challenges if either the White House were to change power in after the election, or the balance and the dynamic in Congress would change. So really wanting to make sure that we tick off all the boxes and hit all those key regulatory improvements that we've been working on for 3.5 years.
Again, that was PLC Executive Director and NCBA Director of Natural Resources, Caitlin Glover. The Cattle Industry Summer Business Meeting this past week saw industry members meeting in both NCBA Policy Committee and subcommittees, as well as joint committees and subcommittees, to discuss current developments and make plans for the upcoming fiscal year. You can learn more on their website, ncba.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
Thanks, Randall. And in more agriculture news, the House Agriculture Committee on Wednesday announced two new members, Chris Jacobs, a New York Republican, and Troy Balderson, an Ohio Republican. Jacobs won a special election in June and will serve the remainder of the term, left by retired Congressman Chris Collins. Collins, a Republican, pled guilty to wire fraud and securities fraud last year and resigned from his position. Jacobs previously served as a state senator in New York and a county clerk. Balderson of Ohio was elected to the U.S. House in 2018 and takes the place of James Comer, who will depart the Agriculture Committee. Balderson also serves on the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee and the Small Business Committee. In welcoming the pair to the committee, Texas Republican Representative and Ranking Member Mike Conaway said, quote, "Both understand the importance of supporting our farm families, and I look forward to working alongside Chris and Troy on behalf of rural America." This report was provided by the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. And it's time for us to head out for a quick break, but we'll be right back with more of today's Farm City News Day when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Our friend Chuck Zimmerman over at AgWire.com had the opportunity to chat with USDA Undersecretary for Natural Resources and Environment about the Forest Service's management of grasslands. Let's take a listen.
I'm visiting with Jim Hubbard, who is the Undersecretary for Natural Resources and Environment. And I know you are in Denver attending the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Summer Business Meeting. How's it going out there?
It's a beautiful day and a good crowd, and we had a good conversation.
Well, I know that you are doing an update, with the Federal Lands Committee. Very important stuff with Forest Service management of grasslands. So we want to talk about the memorandum that Secretary Perdue signed. This was to be like a blueprint or a modernization of the Forest Service. Several really important areas in there, like increasing productivity of forests and grasslands and focus on grazing as an important management tool. Can you talk to me a little bit about the memorandum and just how important grazing is to the Forest Service's management of these landscapes?
But yes, I can. And I'll start with Secretary Perdue's approach. He believes our focus should be more active management on the land. And so, of course, we want to do that in the right way for sustainability. But we believe that the management of those lands is important to their future. And so that's an emphasis. That's a focus that he has. And it's an expectation that the Forest Service is being responsive to and trying to meet our goals and how we measure those goals. For timber, it's measured in volume, even though we understand it's a lot more than that, and we expect that our local units will translate that into what is best for the land, regardless of how it is produced. And the approach is, with Secretary being a former governor, is shared stewardship. So the Forest Service and the state compare priorities, and we pick mutual priorities that produce the best return on the investment for the condition of the forest and the grasslands. So all of that's going on, and the agency's paying attention to it. So the grazing portion, there's roughly 4 million acres of Forest Service property that's primarily grassland and grazing, and 6,200 permittees on that. So we've got a lot of customers and shared stewardship land managers helping us with how that land is managed. And that's important to us. The customer portion of that, Secretary's expectation is that we provide the best customer service. So that means listening to our permittees, trying to figure out what their issues might be, how we might address them, how we might do that and still be stewards of the land. And that works out very well. That's a good group of people that know what the sustainability needs and requirements of the land are, and help us to not only use it in the proper way, but help us to reduce such things as wildfire risk and help us to manage in a way that produces other benefits. So all of that's very much a part of the approach. The Secretary's memo to the Chief was just to be transparent, be public about what we're trying to do and trying to improve processes that sometimes get in the way of that management. So especially with the National Environmental Policy Act, the NEPA requirements for environmental clearance, the Forest Service had produced its own version of a NEPA rule, which is subservient to the national version that the Council on Environmental Quality released recently. But it's still a part of it, and it's still progressing on its own path. What we're trying to do there is where we have activities, land management treatments, that are seldom objected or are minor objections, that we can proceed with categorical exclusions so that that work can get done faster and less process than the and we can spend more time concentrating on those matters that the public really cares about, wants to pay attention to, and have a voice in. So it separates the work and it lets us proceed. A lot of that is on grasslands and related to grazing and range improvement. So we intend to pursue that and try to put that kind of a rule in place to help us with this active management.
Another key component of the memorandum was increasing access to forest system lands. So for places like Wyoming, Montana, and the Dakotas, how will this direction open more acres to improved management?
We're not proposing revisiting tribal management as such, but we are saying that that access is important. So where we have it, we want to keep it. Where it makes sense, we want to provide it. And so that's the direction that the forests receive that we expect them to be paying attention to. That access is important for land treatments, for wildfire suppression, for grazing access, and recreation, and sometimes those can be in conflict. We want to reduce that conflict, but still provide the land we're saying we're open for business, and we want the public to be able to experience those forest and range lands.
So what are the next steps for USDA and the Forest Service?
To bring as much of this to conclusion as we can in the near future. What we put in process in terms of trying to improve the active management, the direction to the agency, which they are responding to, and make sure we follow through on that, make sure we share our priorities with the states so that we have mutual priorities, and to make sure on our processes that where we can expedite, where we can streamline, that we do. So it makes it helps us get that work on the land done.
Well, final question I've got is, what are other things that the department and the Forest Service are working on over the next few months?
Well, one of our concentrations, especially for August and September, will be wildfire. And it's headed your way. The Northern Rockies and Pacific Northwest forecasts are for above normal activity. And how we respond to that is different this year with the pandemic and coronavirus. So we have to adjust how we mobilize our firefighting resources to keep them safe and keep them available to us so that they don't come down with any issues or problems. And we've increased our aerial assets so that we can hit them harder and faster and then follow up with the ground resources and keep fires small. That's especially important this year to us. Large fires and a lot of people mobilized in one place isn't conducive to operations under COVID-19. So we're working hard at that, and that'll take a lot of our concentration in August and September. And that's also because, thanks to the fire funding solution, the resources are still available to the field to get their active management accomplished. We won't interrupt their operations, and we won't interrupt their flow of revenue so that they can get the job done. So we expect to finish strong.
All right, it's time to head out for a quick break, but we'll be right back with more of the day's Farm City News Day when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. And as promised, we're back with more of the day's agriculture news. Up first is Brian German.
The Donald Danforth Plant Science Center recently announced that the AgTech Next Summit will be held online this year. Originally scheduled for November 10th through the 12th, organizers have adjusted the event to be more accommodating to the online experience. The virtual summit will now consist of 7 60-minute live sessions beginning on September 22nd with a keynote from the founder and CEO of Impossible Foods, Dr. Pat Brown. The AgTech Next virtual conference is centered around the theme of risks and rewards and will feature innovators, investors, and industry experts. Along with multiple sessions of content, the virtual summit will also consist of an online event platform to offer attendees an opportunity to network in one-to-one meetings and share perspective in interactive table talks. Attendees will also be able to engage with industry partners 30 minutes prior to each session through a virtual exhibit hall. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
A technology developed by USDA Research improves the time and efficiency in producing bio-based products such as polymers and films that become everyday household items. USDA's Rod Bain has more in this report.
The process of converting plant matter into bio-based polymers, foams, and films for products ranging from car seats to pharmaceutical coatings has advanced in recent years. An example from USDA researcher Atano Biswas is a microwave unit, unlike anything you find in your home.
These are kind of much more sophisticated microwave, and they can control how much energy you put in, how long, and then how much heat you generate, and they have a lot of safety feature. They can be small to very large, depending on what kind of production you need.
Biswas believes this technology can assist in further development of bio-based products like grocery and storage bags and foam packing materials, products that are biodegradable and that can be made from biomass and plant waste like stalks, as well as the crop itself. Currently, many of such products are constructed with petroleum synthetics.
Again, that was USDA's Rod Bain reporting. And rounding out our show today, Secretary Perdue expressed concerns over European ag policies. USDA's Stephanie Ho has this report.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue expressed concern about Europe's new farm-to-fork strategy, which calls for more locally grown agriculture.
If I were a European farmer based on the farm-to-fork strategies, I would be literally concerned, because if you make me anti-competitive, my only hope is protectionism. That's not going to be good for international trade or anything.
He spoke on a virtual transatlantic panel organized by the European Conservatives and Reformists Party.
We have a trade deficit with the EU, between the United States and the EU, and certainly that's not even including the $37 billion of automobiles coming from the European Union. So there's a lot at risk.
What's his solution?
Let the consumer ultimately decide. That's what we do here in the United States. Let your consumers decide. If they want these products, then they will buy them. If they don't, I can assure you, our farmers won't send them.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgNetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgNetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City News Day by AgNet West.